This is a recording of the public hearing on Website and Internet Communications Improvement Initiative held by the Federal Election Commission on August 25th, 2009. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Now we convene our panel, which began this morning as an open session on how to improve our website and our communications through the internet. And we just completed our first panel, and we're now about to begin with our second. I want to thank each of the panelists for being here today. And first, I'd like to introduce Mr. Barron. Mr. Barron was named by Washington Magazine as a top campaign and elections lawyer and one of the top 50 lawyers in Washington, D.C. He advises clients in all aspects of political law, including federal, state, and local campaign finance laws, government ethics requirements, and lobbying laws. He's argued four cases before the United States Supreme Court and has regularly appeared as a television and radio commentator, particularly with Fox News and NPR. During the 2004 Florida recount, he served as a legal analyst for NBC News and ABCNews.com. He's the author of the book, The Election Law Primer for Corporations, published by the American Bar Association. Recognizing Mr. Barron among the top tier of practitioners in his field, Chambers USA recently called him, quote, one of the best election lawyers in the United States with the most comprehensive knowledge of the law at both state and federal levels, unquote. Mr. Barron, I know you can live up to this today.
I wish you'd warned me.
Next, let me introduce Sheila Krumholz. Is the Center for Responsive Politics Executive Director, serving as the organization's chief administrator, the liaison to its board and major funders, and its primary spokesperson. Sheila became executive director in December 2006, having served for 8 years as CRP's research director, supervising data analysis for OpenSecrets.org and Open Secrets and CRP's clients. She first joined the CRP staff in 1989, that's me, not you, and was assistant editor of the very first edition of Open Secrets, the center's flagship publication. Sheila has a degree in international relations and political science from the University of Minnesota. And we have with us our own staff member, Mr. Bob Biersack, who's a special assistant to the staff director for data integration. He has served as our press officer and also as our commission's statistician. I would like to say that Mr. Biersack has compiled recommendations to date with how we can improve our website and has provided us with a computer printout showing that we have 251 recommendations before we even started today. So the work has been a tremendous compilation of this, of the suggestions we've had to date, and now we need to figure out how to take those into consideration and to maximize how to improve it. I'd like to begin with Ms. Krumholz. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks to the Commission for the invitation to speak at today's hearing and for seeking public input in order to effectively update FEC.gov website for the greatest good. The Center for Responsive Politics is a nonpartisan nonprofit research organization that tracks money in U.S. politics and its effect on elections and public policy. As such, the FEC's primary place among the sources and resources that we rely on cannot be overstated. In fact, campaign finance research has always been the core component of our work, beginning in September 1983 when we published our first monograph on campaign spending. CRP's mission remains to inform citizens about how money in politics affects their lives, empower voters and activists by providing unbiased information, and advocate for a transparent and responsive government. We pursue our mission largely through our website, opensecrets.org, offering a free and comprehensive resource for industry-coded and standardized campaign contributions, lobbying data, and other kinds of money and politics research and analysis. Although we are best known for the value we add to the campaign contribution data, CRP does also advocate on behalf of effective disclosure policies. I previously testified before Congress in support of increased disclosure on presidential libraries. Earlier this year, we responded to the Commission's request for public comment on the agency's management of FEC data and disclosure, and we support electronic filing by Senate committees and other common sense disclosure measures like the Sunlight Foundation's Read the Bill campaign. In my comments today, I want to emphasize some key points made in the Center's written comments. First, about the retail function of the FEC website. There should be no doubt about the need for the FEC to design its site to principally serve the public, particularly in the realm of campaign finance disclosure. The FEC is a trusted resource for voters, and the FEC.gov site should be a useful resource, too. As Professor Malbin testified, the public's need must be at the forefront of all portions of a website redesign aimed at disclosure. There is no other existing entity that can serve in this role in the same way the FEC can. CRP's site, opensecrets.org, and others may provide some of the same core data and search functions as the FEC's site, and may be able to do so in a more user-friendly format. Such sites provide more avenues for the public to find this information, providing easy access to reliable data and enabling others to create new tools and sites based on the FEC data should certainly be a goal in this process. But nonprofits are dependent on the vagaries of fundraising. And even though CRP plans to stick around for another 26 years, what's funded today isn't necessarily going to be funded tomorrow. The same can and has been said of journalistic enterprises, and for-profit firms may choose to put public data behind a paid subscription firewall. Private entities may one day stop providing a certain resource and go in a new direction. Furthermore, they may not espouse or even wish to espouse the necessary nonpartisan stance to inspire confidence as a reliable resource for all Americans. While we at CRP have invested much care in our reputation for nonpartisan, accurate data and analysis, the same cannot be said of all organizations that might wish to act as private outlets for government data. In sum, providing meaningful access to public data, searchable, sortable, and downloadable, is an inherently government function which, regardless of other options available, the FEC should provide. Second, we realize that the wholesale function, that is, FEC's role providing the data architecture and protecting the integrity of the data itself, may be a lesser focus of this initiative. Nevertheless, it's one key thing that comes to mind when asked to consider recommendations for improving FEC's disclosure function. CRP is clearly not alone in that regard. Others have also testified to their concerns about data integrity and validation rules. In fact, on Monday, when we posted a blog item asking our readers how the FEC could improve the website, within minutes, we received the following recommendation from a random reader. The FEC must stop letting candidates report information however they want to. There needs to be better standard information on the website. Another comment followed that about adding functionality. So there is clearly interest out there. It goes beyond, I think, the kind of usual suspects, including CRP. And ultimately, data quality going in has big implications for ease and flexibility of data presentation on FEC.gov. The main wholesale or core data issues raised in the Center's written comments have to do with common errors in the data and the FEC's difficulty with resolving them in an efficient and timely manner. For instance, amendments and the inability to match original and amended records have led to many duplicates existing in data over long periods of time. Mr. and Mrs. contributions. As referenced in the Federal Register notice of these hearings, the FEC staff time necessary to split joint contributions reported from married couples delays release of the data and also creates duplicates. Reattribution redesignation problems and the inconsistent ways that these are reported make accurate processing of contributions incredibly complex and greatly increase the likelihood of errors. Unitemized versus itemized contributions are a topic of great interest and yet among the public and certainly at CRP. And yet the data is, again, rife with inconsistency, making comparative analysis difficult at best. It is our belief and understanding that these problems are largely representative of insufficient data standards or enforcement of those standards in the campaign finance reports filed with the FEC. We recognize that the Commission may be looking for other information more specific to revising the FEC website. As we said in our comments submitted earlier this year, back in February, offering basic data, searchable and downloadable through FEC.gov's graphic map interface is a terrific way to meet people where they sit. And we hope that that is just the beginning of similar new features to come. Interesting data visualizations, simpler descriptions, and the like are all logical elements to incorporate and have been discussed in prior testimony to the Commission. Although CRP staff has not undertaken a recent top-to-bottom analysis of FEC's current site, we do share similar challenges to the FEC with regard to the varied constituencies we serve. Like the FEC, CRP's core constituency, our mission, is to serve the public. So we're happy to provide feedback about design and navigation as you move forward in your redesign efforts. Philosophically, our overarching concern would be that the FEC retain the direct public outreach and user-friendly emphasis that you've begun with items like maps. Podcasts, RSS feeds, and APIs are a logical extension of that. We would also like to lend support to the idea raised previously that the FEC site should embrace an interactive dialogue with the public and various FEC constituencies. There are at least a few communities out there that I can think of that would benefit from, appreciate, and participate in dialogue with key members of the FEC staff on a blog or online groups forum. When CRP launched our Open Secrets, Open Data initiative in April to provide non-commercial access to our value-added data, we simultaneously launched a conversation on Google Groups with those who are digging into that data. That conversation has taught us at least as much as we about our own data and how others would like to use it, as it has facilitated proper interpretation and use of our data by others. Another means of engaging the public, and especially key users of FEC data, might be to create a service ticket system for tracking errors and corrections that both the FEC staff and the public can monitor. This, too, is in comments submitted earlier this year to the Commission. There needs to be a uniform and official method to report errors or suspected errors and to track corrections to the public record on campaign finance disclosure. In any given year, CRP reports to the FEC's data systems staff, errors that may affect dozens or hundreds or even thousands of records. Some of these corrections are made quickly. Most of them are made eventually after some delay for verification. Some are still wrong, months or even years later. There should be a more efficient and effective method to report and track these errors to be certain that they are reviewed and corrected. In addition, having this tool would engage the consumers of FEC data in the dialogue, academics, researchers, the regulated community, educating these important constituencies, tapping their expertise, and getting eyes on the data, more eyes on the data. I know that such a system would be enormously helpful to our organization and, most importantly, to the common goal of providing the public with reliable data. Together, offering forums for online dialogue and a place for reporting and tracking resolutions of errors provide concrete ways to bring the public into the process in an ongoing and mutually beneficial way. I hope my comments, coupled with those submitted last week, are helpful to the Commission as it undertakes this review. I and all of us at the Center for Responsive Politics are happy to provide whatever assistance we can to FEC staff as this important work moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We very much appreciate you being here. Mr. Barron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. Appreciate the invitation to be here with you today and to discuss this subject. As someone who recalls the days when I worked here in 1978, when we first compiled data on information and reports that were filed with the FEC, I can recall, you know, those great decisions of how are we going to categorize political action committees, and we got connected and non-connected and labor union and corporate and trade association, and then the capable staff was able to compile all that data, which had to be inputted by vendors into a format that could be released on some sort of a basis, usually annually or at the end of an election cycle. And now, you know, all of this data is so easily compiled. It's all electronic. It's all on the website. And of course, we didn't have a website in 1978, but it's just remarkable what has happened. And I want to just confirm, as a practitioner, leading a group of practitioners at our firm, Wiley Rhine LLP, we use your website constantly, every day, for information about filings, about client questions, about legal resources, and we can confirm from our experience that having information like the statute, like the regulations, your newsletter, advisory opinions, your many helpful basic publications, which people can print out and follow, as well as your enforcement data and just basic information about your meetings. Although I do want to say that I had trouble finding on your website the details of today's hearing, and it just underscores that all of that data does need constant updating, and that, of course, is a commitment of resources. I did want to share with the commission three areas where I think there can be some improvement or added enhancement. And this is based on two things. One is our utilization of your website as practitioners, and secondly, comments that we may have heard from clients. The first of the three areas is PAC data, Political Action Committee releases of statistical summaries. The commission, almost on a quarterly basis, releases that type of data with respect to campaigns and with respect to political party data. It does so on an extremely irregular basis when it comes to political action committees. And all of that information, of course, is filed electronically, unlike some campaigns, like for the Senate and perhaps some party committees. So it seems to be data that should be amenable to more regular compilation and release, because we hear from the PAC community that they would like that information for themselves, and I assume that the public would as well, to know what kind of money is being raised by, you know, the top 50 corporate PACs, the top 50 union PACs, and all those various categories. It would be helpful to have that information on a regular release basis, hopefully quarterly, and certainly no less frequently than semi-annually. Secondly, as practitioners, we have some comments with respect to the utilization of advisory opinions. First of all, the enhancement of your advisory opinion database has been a dramatic improvement. It's the searchability of opinions has improved significantly. It's much quicker. Obviously, it's all much more scalable as well. But there are three aspects of the old advisory opinion database which are no longer present, which I think, if it can be incorporated into your enhanced database, would be useful to not only practitioners, but perhaps the public as well. The first is that the old database used to have a section where a user could go to any year and to link to a specific advisory opinion. So if you wanted to search advisory opinions by year, it was all on one section of the website, and you could just go click on the advisory opinion that you wanted, or if you wanted to search through several opinions issued in a particular calendar year, it was easy to do so. That is no longer possible, not in such an efficient way. Secondly, it used to be possible to click onto a particular advisory opinion and then copy and paste into an email the link to that particular advisory opinion. So if someone had a question and a user wanted to provide a link to the advisory opinion, it was doable under the old system. Under the current system, an attorney can still provide the advisory opinion number to the client or whoever is asking the question. Then the client has to go onto your website, get onto your advisory opinion homepage, input the advisory opinion number, and then click, and then we get all that information. This is all there, but this type of a paste and copy link would make it much more easy for the users to get right to the information that they want. And then third, with respect to the old advisory opinion database, for those of us who are advancing in years and wear bifocals, the opinions were in a large print format, which was very nice when it appeared on the screen. And it also lended itself to copying the entire advisory opinion. You could do that with your cursor and paste it into an email as well, so that the whole document could be inserted into an email. These are obviously not major issues, but they are features in the old system that were used. I can confirm that in our practice group, we use it quite a bit. And when it comes to links directly to advisory opinions, we deal with that every day repeatedly. People have questions, and we like to just allow them to go directly to your site and get the opinion. And then third, in terms of a suggestion, it would be nice to have more links, particularly with respect to state campaign finance information and websites. I know from talking with Bob Biersack that there are links, but they tend to be buried into other documents, so you'd have to pull up all the documents and then go into that particular state. It should be fairly simple to provide a page which would contain all of the states and then links to the agencies in those in each state that deal with campaign finance information. I know I do this for finelaw.com with respect to links not only on campaign finance but also on lobbying and ethics rules. This is a feature that's on that website. It's also an appendix in my book, The Election Law Primer for Corporations. It basically allows people who are looking for information to have all of that data on one internet page and to go to exactly the source for that particular information. Obviously, your mandate is campaign finance, but this principle can be expanded to include information about voting dates. All of that data is contained in each state's relevant campaign finance and voting and Secretary of State websites, and links would be useful, and I'm sure would be used extensively by the public as well as by the regulated community. Of course, I recognize that all of that has to be kept up to date. Links change constantly, I know from my own experience, so it is a potential resource burden, but to the extent that it can be incorporated into your website, I think it would be well used by the public. And those are my suggestions, Mr. Chairman, and thank you again for inviting me here today.
Well, thank you very much. That was very interesting. We've got some more questions for you as we go along, I'm sure. Mr. Biersack? You want to tell us about the 251 recommendations we received to date?
I thought I'd start reading at the top. And,
that sounds great.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I really wanted to do was to try to summarize in a sort of overarching sense what I think we've heard in the last couple of months, which has been enormously useful, I'm sure, for you, but also for the staff, to get a sense for the different audiences we have and their perspectives on what we have available, how they use it. We learn something every day from people who use our information in different ways. And we used to, I'm like Jan, old enough to remember the days when we learned that by having phone conversations with people and discussions. And that's kind of still the orientation that I have in my own mind. But it happens now on the web instead, and one of the adjustments we have to make is to learn how to use the tools that allow us to have those conversations and that interaction and understand it in that way, and we're working toward that. But to give you a sense, we've tried to put them all together, to categorize them to some extent, and then to give you a sense for where we think we are in terms of how we're thinking about implementing some of them, moving forward on some of them, and to the extent that it's possible to identify ones that are relatively more short range, things that we can do fairly quickly, also things that are going to require some more study, some more understanding, some larger implementations that will take longer. And at the back, the last page in that long compilation of comments is that kind of summary where we got some categories and some sense for how the comments broke down, and then I'll talk about some opportunities that I think we have in each one of those categories for moving forward. We heard a lot about the web content, the way in which navigation works, the presentation of the material in general. A lot of that comment focuses on the use of language and the need to use plain English in the way we organize things, in the way we allow for navigation through the site. That's very important. We live in a complex world. This is a difficult subject matter to work through. We all understand that, but we sometimes make it more difficult by creating our own language, and it's clear on the site that we've done that. We've taken some steps initially. We've asked people around the building who deal with the public on a regular basis to look at some of this material, the way it's been organized and the way we describe it now, to make suggestions for what kinds of language changes we should make. We'll run those through the normal process of vetting through the staff, and then we'll have some changes that we think we can make quite quickly, both to descriptions and also to navigation and descriptions of reports, what they mean, where you are in a particular line number or something like that, to make those kinds of changes to make it more apparent to people what it is we're talking about. There's a lot of discussion in many of the comments about the need to use more than just web pages and static content, but to look at multimedia kinds of approaches to communicating with people, and we've taken steps in that direction too. Initially, the fact that we're podcasting even live today on the internet is one example of that. We've started a YouTube channel for FEC video because we heard, and the people within the staff have argued for some time that it's very important to be able to present the material to people in a more comprehensive way, and that video does that, and that this technology now has evolved to a point where we're able to use it, and we're looking forward to I'm sure many exciting programs on the YouTube channel. And beyond that, there's something that's a little longer term that involves this process too, is this need for a much more comprehensive search process on the website. We have traditionally built single objects thinking about one particular problem. Whether it be advisory opinions or closed MERS or audit reports or disclosure data for campaign finance filings, in much too discreet a way, and haven't thought about how we present this, how we might be able to store and present and query this information more comprehensively. That's going to require a bit more work, and it's a larger project to build the infrastructure that will allow us to post just routinely all of the material in almost whatever form we get it. But there are some things that we're doing in the short run as well that will help us learn about how best to build that architecture and that infrastructure. And we'll move forward on that. And as we do, I think we'll also make some changes in the interim in each one of those kind of discrete processes. So I hope we're able to address Jan's concerns about advisory opinion links and to get them into emails more easily, to be able to go directly to an advisory opinion, to look at some of the problems that people told us about in the context of the MER search process, the enforcement query system, which apparently is much more problematic. These are things we need to understand, and we've heard a lot. I myself learned a lot in the last session about those problems, and we'll explore those, whether there are incremental ways that we can address them. And that goes to all the kinds of legal research applications as well. It's the same kind of process. We've been incremental and too isolated in the way we've approached things. And so if we're able to develop what was talked about this morning in terms of a more global content management system, mm-hmm. That will allow us to take better advantage of all of the material that we have. We're taking some short-term steps in terms of trying to improve the MER process by adding those cases from the very beginning of the commission's existence. Some of those old documents, Jan, that I'm sure will have your name somewhere, will appear on the web soon. When you deal with old material like that,
we can click on and see Jan Baron and see all the, for the last 35 years where he is on every one of them.
That goes to the nature of the information itself. Some of it's going to be searchable that way. Some of it not so much because of the way it was done on a typewriter or a mimeograph machine. Mm-hmm. But yes, it'll all be available on the website. That's one of the things we heard last month, and it's something that Mr. Chairman, you've moved forward on aggressively. Adding administrative fine cases to that process as well is something that we're working on now that will happen soon. The information as data for those, and also the documents that go with those cases where we issue quick penalties for late filing and non-filing. is another example of a short-term kind of project that we're involved in now that will be able to help incrementally as we again think about that, trying to build something more broadly for the future. And then, of course, lots of comments about the nature of the data and the disclosure information, the substance of the reports that get filed with us, and how we display that. That's what I thought I was actually going to work on when I asked to take this job in the beginning. It's still the thing that's closest to me, but it's a little broader than that, correctly a little broader than that, and so we're thinking in new ways. But for example, having more flexible formats for providing the information and providing it more quickly and more directly to people. We are just about to launch in the next couple of weeks, I hope, the first template for that kind of process, where we'll have files of information available. The first ones that we're choosing somewhat arbitrarily come actually from the new bundling disclosure requirements that we have developed in the last year. And so we'll have, for example, lists of all the leadership PACs, which have now been identified, and the members or candidates who sponsor those committees are identified in statements of organization. We'll be able to create a list of those committees along with their sponsors that will be searchable, that'll be available in, you've heard these terms over the last month, XML and CSV file formats, so that they can be directly computer-to-computer interaction can get them. You'll be able to register for an RSS feed of those information so that you can get it quickly, just automatically sent to you when something changes. And we'll use that as the guiding principle, as the template for filling out most of the information that we currently have available in those old formats that you kept hearing about, the COBOL and things like that. We'll change those files over time and make them available in this kind of process as well, trying to address that concern that we make the information as available as quickly as possible and as flexibly as possible so that people can take it and do with it what they will and add value to it. As we've seen in many cases, Sheila's perhaps the biggest, clearest example, but there are many, many others for people taking our information and making good use of it in a variety of ways. We'll also, as part of that, be able to then create these programs that people will be able to automatically register for and update on their own sites, these APIs you hear about or widgets that you hear about. Once we've got the data in a format and in these structures that lend themselves to that, we'll be able to do that fairly quickly. And so that will come in short order. Simple examples probably first. The information that you get when you click on a particular campaign coming from the map, if you go down to the district level and then look at the set of candidates for that district, that presentation of pie charts for breakdowns of receipts and other financial information for those candidates will be available as an API that people can put on their own machines or on their own websites and have readily available for their own purposes. Those kinds of things will happen in the short run as well. Again, as we build a larger infrastructure, we've been frankly struggling for a number of years to move the basic architecture of the disclosure data to something that's current and as flexible as it can be. And the challenge is that both that the information is amazingly complex as Sheila has alluded to, and also that we've had to learn the processes ourselves. We've had to juggle the fact that we have 30 years of information in some cases, some of it in some form and some of it in another form, and to try to make sense of that. It's another example. The way we've done disclosure on the website up to now is another example of incremental sort of quickly putting something together that we thought was, well, good enough, but probably didn't need to be really robust because we'll have the next big thing will come soon. And soon didn't come very quickly in this case. But we're much closer now. The basic elements are there now, I think. And I'm much more confident about our own capabilities as well. We have staff on board now that have the skills that we need. We can always use more, but we have that basic kernel that I think is necessary to be able to do this. So I'm optimistic now that we'll be able to move forward quickly. We could move forward a lot more quickly if the Senate would agree to file their reports electronically. In ways that I won't go into and that you couldn't imagine, that has been an amazingly frustrating and difficult and complex problem for us. And it's held us back both in terms of being able to do things quickly, being able to do things comprehensively, being able to do things just to have the computer do the work as opposed to having people do the work. That's really been a frustration for us over a long time, and there's hope, I think, that there's light at the end of that tunnel, and we may get there soon. But that's been an important step, and we'll need to do that as well. Longer term, in addition to finishing this development of the architecture and coming up with creative visualizations for other kinds of information, the PAC data that Jan talked about, that we don't have a handle on what the analogy to the map is for PACs, but I'm sure there's one out there. And as we have conversations with people, we'll find a way to make it simpler. I mean, the easiest one is just to search by organization name or something like that.
Well, I noticed today, I think it was on your blog, somebody said, well, can we search it by geography? Well, I never really thought about that, but that's an interesting approach too to take a look at.
It is. The funny thing is a lot of PACs are organized and their addresses are here.
Sure.
Their focus may be elsewhere, but so we don't, the geography doesn't lend itself that well. But there's something, I'm sure that creative minds will give us good ideas about how to organize that and to make those presentations more straightforward for single committees, groups of committees, and the movement among the information. The other thing that's really challenging and kind of fun in all this is that when you get started and think about how people approach this information, that it really is kind of rolling around in the data. It's interrogating it. I see something presented to me about a candidate. I see the list of donors that they have. Well, what else are these organizations doing? Who else are they giving to? What other kinds of activities involved here? One of the principles that we've talked about a lot downstairs in the last few months is making sure that not only do we present the information in a straightforward way, but we also give people context. And this goes to the other one of the other general points that I think Sheila made and that we've heard from others as well. It's one thing to provide the raw material as quickly and as flexibly and as straightforward way as we can, but we also have, I think, an obligation to inform people and educate them about how the campaign finance process works, and what other kinds of information might be available that would help them understand the number that they see for a particular candidate's receipts or a particular PAC's contributions. Is that a lot or a little? How does it change over time? How does it compare to other similarly situated entities? And the visualizations that we do need to do that function too. They need to be an education tool, and we're looking at things like that. We've got in our minds how those kinds of little individual elements that might appear around the screen could work. And that's a longer term process. Those are those widgets and other kinds of programs that hopefully will become this full visualization that we'll develop over time. That'll take a little longer. And then we've heard talk about portals and the ability of our users to customize the experience that they have. We understand that they don't necessarily come to us from FEC.gov, but some of our audience does because some of it is the regulated community. They're committee treasurers and they're practicing attorneys and others who are involved with us in a different level. And so they ought to be able to have a presentation right in front of them in the very beginning of the kinds of tools that they typically use the most. And that may be a slightly different set than a reporter might want to see. There'll be a lot of crossover. There's a lot of legal research that reporters and members of the public might need to do. There's a lot of disclosure information that the regulated community wants to see. So I don't mean to suggest that they're totally different experiences that they should have. But having the right tools in front of the audience in the right place at the right time is something that the technology allows for now. But that'll be a development that we'll have to make over time too. The other thing that I want to echo is something that we heard this morning about how important it is to use the resources both inside and outside the building that we have available to us now. I'll give you a couple examples. When the Sunlight Foundation suggested a couple of screens of redesign of the website. One of the things we tried to do was encourage the staff to take a look at those and let us know what they thought. And in that sort of brief conversation that I had at that time with a few people around the building, I learned things about the skills of some of the staff and their experiences and some ideas that they had that I would never have been exposed to otherwise. Another example within the building, we have a group of managers who are currently undergoing some management training. It's called Action Learning, and I got to be the problem that they're supposed to solve. That's not an unusual experience for me in my opinion.
Naturally selected.
Yeah, that's right. But it's been very interesting to watch them work through. And I presented this sort of the problem in its largest scale in a very sketchy way. We have this amazingly complicated system and it's the way in which we think about the information that we receive and the way in which we provide it is sketchy and difficult. Can you think about this? Is there a better way? If we could start over today, what would we do? And they're working through that, and the training part of that experience is ending soon, but I never thought of it as just the training experience. This is a group of people from different parts of the building, represents really just about all of the commission. So they have different orientations, different perspectives, and they've learned to work together to think about a problem, and they'll come up with creative solutions, I know, and we need to work forward with them, too, and create other kinds of opportunities for that sort of thing. At the same time that we launch these new little data formats that will grow over time, we're also going to launch a blog where I will get to communicate with people about how to use the information, how the data works, the nuances, the details, the arcane kind of things that people need to know that we used to conduct on a telephone. We're going to use that process. But it's also going to allow us to find new users that we didn't know were there, but they're clearly there, and to take full advantage of that, to have that conversation in this new format and to build different user groups. I've threatened Sheila many times with the fact that we're going to get their technical staffs to come in here, hers and others around town and from elsewhere, and we're going to work through the ugly details, the sausage making of the database so that we can take best advantage of their ideas. And sooner or later, I'm going to make good on that threat and probably sooner so that we can take advantage of those kinds of means of communication, methods of collaboration. That's one of the words we hear all the time right now. So that we can build it better together. But I really wanted to mainly give you a sense that we've certainly heard a lot. There are some things we weren't aware of that are new, good ideas, problems that we weren't sure we weren't very aware of, and that we think both there are long-term solutions that are going to take a while, but there are also some things that we can do pretty quickly to make things better in the meantime, and we're anxious to get going.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. That's very heartening to hear all that, and I want to just thank the staff, Alec, and everybody, Wei and Bob, and others that have been working together so hard to put this together, and I know we're going to have a lot of good changes coming up soon. Is there any comments, Commissioner Weintraub?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I listen to Bob, I think that just listening to Bob talk is great evidence of the kind of enthusiasm and expertise that we have right here in the building. You can tell that, you know, Bob would just talk all day about this stuff, and I've heard him talk all day about this stuff. And we are fortunate today to have some people here in the room who have years and years of experience of being dedicated to this specific issue. All due respect to Mr. Barron and his distinguished career in election law on this particular issue of putting data out and promoting transparency and doing a better job of getting information out. Bob Biersack and Sheila Krumholz and Patricia Young, who's sitting in the audience, our head of disclosure, have been, you know, in the trenches on this stuff for decades and really deserve a lot of compliments for all their hard work in this issue. I frequently hear from other people, gee, why can't you do what Open Secrets does? How come your website can't be as good as theirs? And I think there are some things that we can do to make it more like Open Secrets and more accessible and easier to use in that way. There's some things that I think, you know, our policy decisions that the commission has historically made, that we didn't want to do some of the things that Open Secrets does. I think one of the things that people love about Open Secrets is that they categorize donors, you know, this industry and that industry. You know, this candidate got so many dollars from the trial lawyers or the oil and gas industry or the tobacco industry or whatever the industry is. And the commission has historically felt that categorizing donors in that way wasn't really our job and involve the kind of judgment calls that, you know, maybe we shouldn't be making. You know, we can think about whether we want to revisit that or whether it really is a more appropriate function for somebody like CRP to be doing. Some of the basic issues that have been raised about, you know, being able to cut and paste a link that will work. I know I have this problem also, and I think it goes across all of our databases. I know our staff has pointed out to me, and perhaps it came up in the earlier hearing, that you cannot currently cut and paste a link to a specific campaign finance report. And you have to, you know, as Jan was saying earlier, you have to go in and do your own search. You can describe to people how to do the search, but you can't just say, here, this is how you can get to this particular report. And particularly given some of the issues that Sheila raised about redundancies and not being always apparent which is the amendment and which is the final and which report you're talking about, I think that's just something that we have to it's a basic internet function, and we have to figure out a way of doing that. But I do have an answer for one problem that was raised by Mr. Barron, because it's a subject that and Alec probably knows what I'm going to say, because this is something that came up when we were doing the redesign of the AO database. And I said, the print got smaller. You can't do that to people like me, because I can't read that small. And of course, what happened was we added an extra panel of information along the side, which has very useful information about the history of the AO and comments and all that, got a lot of good links there, which are useful. But mostly because I was complaining about it, Alec incorporated a feature, so you've got to look for this. Maybe it's not as obvious as it could be, but there is something that you can click on the left side of the screen to reduce that panel on the side with that extra information. So then the AO will expand to the full screen, and it will be much easier to read.
All right. I'm familiar with that
okay.
High technology, and yes, the document can be enlarged, but it would be nice to just have the old format augmenting all of these wonderful other features, you know, on the homepage of the advisory opinion search page. There used to be just something, you know, search by year. You have something like that now, but it's a new format, not the old format. You can just put that in there, and it would basically produce all the same material.
I'm with you on that. I also look for it that way, but I think I have to say I think that's partially because you and I learned how to do it that way when that's the way it was organized, and because I'm the same way. I'm more comfortable looking for it in the way that I used to do it. Mm-hmm. But I do think that would be a useful thing to build back in. I thought I had the answer, but you already figured it out. That's really. All I had, Mr. Chairman, and I do want to thank the panelists, and I hope that this will be the beginning of a lot of interactions. You know, I think we ought to put together a task force, and you know, perhaps with Mr. Biersack at the head of it, that would be able to draw on a lot of the expertise that we have out there, people who are willing to come in and either write comments or come in and testify. Maybe we can dragoon some of these folks into serving on some kind of an advisory board for us and can work with us on an ongoing basis to highlight some of the issues that we have with the internet and the website and because it's a constant process. You know, I think every single year that I've been here, there have been improvements to the website, but it's not a static thing, and people expect it to be constantly improving, and we need to do that, and we need all the help we can get in doing that, because unlike the EPA, we are never going to have $12 million to invest in our website. If we did, I bet you guys could really do a bang-up job of it, but, you know, we're just never going to have those kind of resources.
Thank you very much. Other comments? I had a question, Ms. Krumholz, your early comment about wholesale versus retail, and that has come up in our previous discussions about what our role should be, and are we infringing on the good work that foundations do with their own more retail approach toward data assembly and disclosure. But I was interested in your point that we should not shy away from being a retail in a number of ways. And as Commissioner Weintraub points out, policy-wise, some things we don't do. But what would be some of the ways that you could suggest that we ought to stick with, or maybe see if maybe 5 or 10 things that we might do to make it more retail, maybe visualize more with our maps, that kind of thing? Do you have any suggestions?
Well, that's really all I was referring to, is just making the site speak to the average American and not shying away from that role because other organizations are perhaps meeting that need right now. They may not tomorrow. And so it's really, I think, not an option of prioritizing kind of the back-end infrastructure over the front-end interface for average Americans coming to the site. I think you need to I believe this is a given, but just to be certain, that the FEC website should really provide a lot of the functionality that sites like Open Secrets have provided in ease of search and in just ability to get to the core raw data. Whether you go beyond that to do the kind of value-added research that we or others do, I think is a separate secondary question. The first thing is just making the site work for people in the way that they would expect a contemporary, state-of-the-art, important agency interface to work. I think it's just not an option to. I think, and I said in my comments, my written testimony, that in my written comments, that you must deal with the inconsistencies in the data, and that doing that first will aid the secondary process of creating the website front end. But I just don't think that whether or not other organizations are providing that function now is relevant.
Any other questions? Mr. Palmer?
I just wanted to make a brief comment of thanks to these panelists and the other panelists, because it certainly helps us as we go down the road to look at our information technology strategic plan. It's always good to realign oneself. And many of the suggestions, I think, that have been raised over the past several months have certainly helped us in that direction. And as we look at data warehousing and enterprise content management and enterprise search, we always need to realign ourselves. And so the things that we have learned and we will hope to learn over the weeks and months to come, we think that we can get better, and this process has certainly been helpful for that. And I just want to say thank you.
I did have a question maybe of our own staff, Mr. Biersack. When Mr. Barron indicated we lost some of the searchability features, what would cause that?
When we redesigned the advisory opinion search process, the way in which they wrote the process, the way in which they built the program, made it much more flexible in terms of searching the text, in terms of presenting all of the materials associated with an AO, the original request and the comments and all of that material. In exchange for that, because of the way they did it, it wasn't possible to embed a link that goes directly to a specific document within that process. That's something we know we need to address. We've heard about it before, and hopefully we'll be able to find some short-term measure that'll take care of that.
Okay, good. Any other comments? Mr. Vice Chairman? Ms. Duncan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had one question that about a topic that hasn't come up here today but was one that was addressed in the notice for the hearing. And I just can't resist the temptation to ask Mr. Barron his opinion of this or how you might react to this. And that has to do with the electronic filing of documents through the website in the areas of advisory opinions, rulemakings, and maybe even in our enforcement process. Mm-hmm. So not talking now about emailing documents, but actually through the website electronically filing advisory opinion requests, mm-hmm. comments, petitions for rulemaking, comments to rulemakings as well as potentially complaints, which would be a little bit more complicated mm-hmm. because of the requirement to have complaints signed and sworn. But I wonder how you would react to or whether you think that would be a good idea. And then just to put a slightly finer point on it, if you'd have a favorable reaction, how would you react to maybe mandating the online version of that and the commission not accepting potentially paper versions of any of those documents mm-hmm. that I've described?
Well, we pretty much do everything electronically with the commission these days anyhow. We will, just as a courtesy, always file an advisory opinion in a PDF format with your office or with the secretary of the commission. Comments are routinely transmitted electronically. I think that, of course, is the trend elsewhere. You know, district courts and now the Court of Appeals here in the District of Columbia have pretty much mandatory electronic filing of all pleadings. And I think it is something that seems to be available to virtually all people, although you'll have to consider whether that will impede, for example, the filing of a complaint by somebody. And then if you do have electronic filing in enforcement matters, there will be the added consideration of preserving confidentiality, which is statutorily mandated. So there are some obvious considerations, but electronic filing, at the very least, should be encouraged. And if it can be made mandatory, assuming you can work out all those other considerations, then it certainly would be something that would not be an impediment to me or my group. And I think that for the vast majority of Americans. But there are those who do not have electronic access, and that will have to be taken into account.
Thank you. That's
okay, Mr. Barrelly?
Do you have a question?
I thought I saw you raise your hand a little earlier. You mentioned a service ticket system. What did you mean by that? I was curious to know.
I just meant a formal process by which we would inform the FEC and others, the data users, consumers of the data, of an issue we're finding in the data, and a way to record that so that there is a an electronic paper trail, and that it ultimately gets resolved, and that others are informed how it is resolved or whether it cannot be resolved and why. So right now, or historically, the process has been I'll call Bob or Paul Clark or Jeff Chumley, and I'll say, I'll say what's going on, and they'll say there's a reason for that, or I'll just email them saying here are the transaction IDs for the problematic records that appear to be erroneous to me, unless you can explain why they are correct. And sometimes we will get a reply saying you're right, delete these records. Here are the changes. Here are the changes you should make. And we tell people call us all the time and say, "This is wrong. You've got the data wrong." And I say, if it's on the FEC site, we would like it changed there first. So if you're the filer, contact the FEC to get the process going, so that when we download next time, the data is correct. Anyway, creating this service ticket system would just put some structure into that process. And I think, again, very helpfully create a dialogue between all of the users of the kind of advanced users of the data and average Americans, for that matter.
So it would work that you would write in, but others would see the request or the changes, and so they could chime in, any blogger, yeah, I agree, not a problem, let's do this, or that type of thing. Is that the theory?
Right. Depending on how you structure it, it might be that only FEC staff could respond to a request, or maybe there's an ancillary kind of Google Groups forum where people could say, oh, I see that you made that request, but actually that's not a problem, and here's why, or I had the same request a year ago, and it still hasn't been dealt with. So just creating dialogue, but public dialogue, so that others can benefit from it between users and the FEC, and maybe have as part of that or a separate forum for people to discuss issues they're seeing. That's what we're experiencing now with our Google groups on the open data initiative. We're seeing people talk about our data, and we're learning from that, and it's been incredibly helpful to us.
We had a recommendation for a new media manager, a new media. What do you think of that approach? I'm not sure exactly what new media meant. At first I thought it meant a new one, and now I realize it means new media. So,
I think I would see that to Clay Johnson. He, as a IT professional, that is more of his bailiwick. But I understand the logic behind having someone who integrates the functions. I think in a way that Ms. Doris does in her shop. She mm-hmm. she has both IT and marketing reporting to her, so that there is someone who is the decision maker that is considering both perspectives. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I would cede that to the Sunlight Foundation.
Any other comments, questions? If not, I think this concludes our session. I want to thank you both, all of you, very much for being there. And you can watch us develop, I hope, and we'll probably be back in touch with, like Mr. Weintraub, some advisory or panel or focus group to help refine some of our thinking along this line. But again, thank you very much. And we'll conclude this session of our open session for today.
Thank you.